And our guest, Jeffrey Mishlove, when we come back, we're going to talk about his The PK Man, a very true and strange story of Ted Owens. We'll have Jeffrey explain that again on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Perhaps this was the book, Jeffrey, that put you on the map, The PK Man, more than 10 years ago. Tell us about the story of Ted Owens, and how did you come upon this story?
I was first introduced to Ted Owens back in 1976. At the time, I was visiting Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ, the two scientists who were doing remote viewing research at SRI International, and they basically told me about Ted Owens and asked me to please take these files off of their hands because it was just too hot for them to handle. He had written to them saying to them, why are you wasting your time studying people like Uri Geller, the Israeli psychic known for metal bending? Uh-huh. Can't you see I'm the world's greatest psychic? And to prove it to you, I'm going to give you a little demonstration. There was a drought going on in California at the time, and Ted Owens said, I am going to end that drought using my psychic powers of psychokinesis and with the help of my alien UFO entities who work with me, and you will know that I did it because there will be rain and sleet and hail and snow, and there will be UFO appearances, and within a few days, the papers will publish front page stories saying that the drought has ended. all of that occurred. And Puthoff and Targ sent a message to Ted Owens saying, congratulations, that was a very good prediction. He sent them back a telegram, as I recall, basically saying, hell no, that was no prediction. I caused it.
I did it, yeah.
Uh-huh. And at that point, at the time, they were doing research sponsored by the CIA in remote viewing, and this was just more than they wanted to handle. And here I was, a young graduate student who didn't have a career yet to risk, and they thought, well, why don't we unload all of this on Jeffrey?
Yeah, and let him botch it up, maybe, right?
I took on the project, and I worked with Ted Owens for over a decade.
What did you think of him, Jeffrey? Some people thought, you know, maybe he was one of the greatest con men ever to pull this over everybody's eyes, but I want to find out from you what you thought of him.
Well, I can tell you this. He was quite sincere. There is no doubt in my mind that he believed that whatever he was doing, it was not a fraud. And he was sometimes confused himself as to what it was. But these phenomena, not only did they occur when he intended to do them, but they occurred spontaneously around him all of the time. And his basic view was that he was in touch with beings he called the space intelligences, other dimensional beings. You could think of them as archetypal forces, really, perhaps forces within his own psyche. It's always been a mystery to me whether they were internal or external. And, you know, the reason I say this is because I asked him to produce a UFO for me. He had demonstrated this on a few other occasions in the files, and he said, yes, I'll do it. I'll make a UFO appear within 90 days, within 100 miles of San Francisco. He said, it will be a UFO like none other. It will be seen by hundreds of people. It will be photographed, and a photograph of this UFO will be published on the front page of one of your local newspapers.
And well, it happened?
That happened. Yes, it did.
And, huh.
A UFO appeared right over the campus of Sonoma State University in Roanoke Park, California, at a time when the art department had invited hundreds of people to stand outside and look up into the sky because they had hired an artist who was doing aerial artwork. He had a little airplane with smoke trailing out the back, and he was producing what they regarded as artistic images in the air, and a UFO appeared in his airspace. It was photographed. It was videotaped. I have the video even today, which was broadcast on the local evening news of Channel 9 in San Francisco, and the Berkeley Gazette published a picture of it on the front page of the paper the next day.
Did he not suffer some severe head injuries when he was a child? Do you know?
Yes, in fact, he had a big, what you might think of as a scar or an indentation in the back of his neck. According to him, one day he was out driving his car in the desert and somewhere in the Southwest, and he woke up suddenly and discovered that he was lying on the ground and there was a circle of tarantula spiders all around him. And he got up and he said something had happened. He believed he had been abducted by aliens and they had operated on his brain. That's part of his story.
Was there ever a movie turned, made about him?
No, it has yet to happen.
Well, you should submit that, or maybe you have.
You know what? It's just such a bizarre story. People have a hard time getting a handle on it, George.
It really is. The late John Mack wrote the foreword for it, didn't he?
Yes, he did, but there were very few people who could really appreciate it. And I'm not so much known for that book. The sales of it weren't that great. I'm much more well-known for my earlier book, The Roots of Consciousness. But most people would say it's too weird, it's impossible, it couldn't have happened, or it's obviously diabolical. One or the other.
One or the
other. Few people could look at it in a balanced way. In fact, even my own professors, when I was working as a graduate student in Berkeley in parapsychology, I had professors, parapsychologists, resign from my committee because this material was just too bizarre for them and they didn't want to be associated with it in any way.
When Ted Owens died in 1987, was it a very quiet event or did anything happen?
He at the time was living in a farmhouse in upstate New York, and the newspaper accounts from that time talk about glowing lights hovering in the sky over that little town, and he claims they were hovering right over the house where he was staying, and he died shortly thereafter. I believe the cause of death was sclerosis of the liver. He was a heavy drinker.
Oh, he was. Did he ever predict things about the future, Jeffrey? Did he let you know about things that might happen that haven't happened yet?
No, I don't have any predictions, long-term predictions, personally from him, although I think other people may have received them. He was known as a pretty good forecaster back in the day. He predicted, for an example, an attack on President Nixon's compound down in the Florida Keys, as I recall, and there were...
Key Biscayne, right?
Key Biscayne, that's right. There were some Cuban frogmen who had actually attempted to assault the compound, and they were intercepted at the time. And Owens' prediction had been published in one of those annual almanacs of psychic predictions. So
you seem pretty accurate.
Pretty good at that. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had in my files, I still have in my files, 168 different demonstrations in which he claimed, for the most part, they weren't predictions. He said, I will produce
this. I will do these things, yeah.
And I went through them. Of course, it's hard to be scientifically precise when you're dealing with large-scale events. I'm talking about earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, power blackouts, UFO sightings, heat waves, cold waves, as well as individual events and storms and things that would come up, but basically I would say two-thirds of those demonstrations came off in more or less as he said they would, and the events that occurred were remarkable things that you would not expect to naturally happen by chance at all.
Did he ever lose his cool?
Well, he did. He was a very, very difficult person. One of the researchers who was involved with me on the project and got to know him described him as being like a grizzly bear with a burr up his butt.
That bad?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the drinking did that to him.
Well, that was part of it, and also the extraordinary quality of the work that he was doing is unlike any other human being that I'm aware of in the history of the paranormal.
Did he ever explain to you, Jeffrey, how he got these abilities and how long he had them?
Well, He at one time he compared himself to Moses. He said nobody since Moses has had these kinds of powers, and he said the UFOs had guided him and were his space intelligences had watched him since he was a child. They had nurtured him in different ways. They had made sure that he had 20 different occupations, everything from a circus knife thrower to a high-speed typist, and that this enabled his mind to be very, very flexible so that he could manipulate their very complex symbolic system and send them telepathic messages regarding the events that he wanted them to produce. That was his story.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have met the guy.
Well, most of the people who met him wished they hadn't. And he was, not that he was always unpleasant. I got along with him for over 10 years. And my colleague, D. Scott Rogo, a well-known parapsychologist who was murdered in 1990, used to play pool with him, and the two of them got along beautifully, but he could be a very difficult person. On one occasion, he threatened me.
What do you mean? Like,
well,
to beat you up?
It was during this UFO experiment that okay. we were doing, and yes, this remarkable UFO had appeared on the front pages of the newspaper that I described earlier, but actually he had promised three UFOs and only two of them had occurred at this point. And I reminded him, I said, you know, you're not 100% right. You know, I was on the phone with him, and he got upset and he slammed the phone down, and within minutes I began to feel very sick. My throat.
Oh, no, like he was sending something to you?
That's how it felt. I felt like, oh, gosh, I'm coming down with this horrible cold. And then 45 minutes later, he called me back and he said, Jeffrey, I apologize. I will never do that to you again. And the cold lifted immediately, which is really unusual.
Wow.
Because once they start, usually, you know, they progress.
This is a great story.
Yeah.
I mean, this book should be a movie.
Well, I hope some Hollywood people are listening to the program. They can contact me. I'm still in touch with Ted Owens' family, and they live in dire circumstances, and I try to send them money when I can. And if any of your viewers feel interested in pursuing the story, if they get onto Yahoo Groups, we have a discussion group about the PK Man. PKman at yahoogroups.com.
Did the family believe in Ted Owens' ability?
Absolutely. In fact, I just spoke with them a couple of weeks ago, and they tell me that they're having similar experiences themselves, because one of the things he did do is train his young sons to continue in the family business, so to speak. And I took his training myself.
Was it just meditation?
No, much more than meditation. It involved hypnotic suggestions, and the specific suggestions I have detailed in my book, The PK Man. But on top of that, he said that he was using his own PK, means psychokinesis, mind over matter.
That's
he was
right.
using his psychokinetic energy on me during the training program, and that would make the difference. But for myself, I never wanted to produce that kind of phenomenon.
And he was a believer in his own abilities, no doubt.
100%. And from all that I know in studying shamans who produce phenomena like this, it's known all over the world, they say you have to have absolute conviction in what you're doing.
So he produced earthquakes, civil unrest, and other things. Did he do anything that was enlightening for mankind?
Well, he began his career as a healer. As a matter of fact.
Really?
And I have in the files dozens and dozens of letters from people who felt that they were healed as a result of his work. But the AMA tried to shut him down. They did shut him down. And according to his daughter, Lori, with whom I've been in touch, that's when he began to turn very bitter. His response was often... because people treated him with contempt and disrespect, and he often felt he needed to teach them a lesson. And he thought
so. He was a little vindictive.
He was vindictive. And of course, when you make outrageous claims of the sort that he did, a lot of people, especially thoughtless people, would say, well, you're a big phony. And he'd say, you know, you think I'm a phony. Well, I better teach you a lesson.
I always thought that when you use these incredible gifts and powers in a negative way to hurt, it would come back to you at least 10 times. Do you think that ever happened to Ted Owens? Because it sounds like he not only was vindictive, but, you know, he went out there and stood his ground and got even if he had to.
Well, I have to say he lived his life when I knew him on the edge of poverty. He was always dependent upon, you know, somebody to come along and sponsor him, and people always did. So he was always sort of one step
right
ahead of the cracks in the ice.
Was he a happy person?
Skating. I don't think he was necessarily happy. No, he had a chip on his shoulder. He was out to prove things. He declared war against the United States government, and of course, the United States government paid no attention to him.
Did he do any media at the time? I mean, was he on any network shows and things like that?
Well, this was back in the days before Coast to Coast.
Yeah, but I mean, you had the Tonight Show still around.
Well, he appeared on many radio shows. I had a radio show and put him on the radio.
Did he do Long John Neville way back?
It's possible that he did. It is, yeah. I can't say for sure about that show, but there were many articles about him. He was well known amongst the people who were really into psychic phenomena back in those days.
Was he called the PK Man, or did you invent that?
No, that was a term he used for himself.
He called himself the PK Man.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. You would think the old days, you know, the science magazines and things like that would have written something about him.
There were articles about him. Otto Binder, who was a science writer in that era, wrote a whole series of articles about Ted Owens. I think they appeared in Argosy magazine, in Fate magazine.
Popular Mechanics, anything like that? Popular Science?
I'm afraid it never rose to that level. People, he tried very hard to interest the scientific community. He had about a dozen scientists, and he sent letters to them on a regular basis detailing his demonstrations. I was one of them.
I bet most people thought he was a little whacked out in the beginning.
Absolutely. And, for example, I tried to interest J. Allen Hynek, the great UFO researcher, in the case. I called a scientific meeting together in San Francisco back in the mid-1970s. Hynek was in town and promised to come, and he never showed up. I literally had to send my wife to go get him at the Hilton Hotel and hijack him and bring him there. And when he finally got to the conference, he said, "I won't touch this man with a 10-foot pole."
So he had an attitude coming in.
Well, he believed that the phenomenon being exhibited by Ted Owens were the product of the unconscious mind, which may very well be the case, a very powerful unconscious mind, sort of like out of the movie Forbidden Planet, if you're familiar with that old science fiction film.
One of the classics.
And he was like a loose cannon, and most researchers who were experienced enough to believe that this might be true felt it was just too dangerous.
Yeah, he scared them all off. We're going to come back, Jeffrey, and take phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, now it's your turn. Stories, questions with Jeffrey Mishlove, and we'll be back in a moment. We'll take them all on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Jeffrey Mishlove with us. We're going to take some calls now. First-time caller Laurel in Alameda, California with us. Hey, Laurel, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
This is seemingly a little tiny issue, a question that I've had for a long time, but my husband laughs at it. But a lot of times when I look at the clock, it's 11:11 or 12:34, 1, 2, 3, 4. And today I was at the grocery store, and I know they put the date and the time on it, but I seldom look at my receipt. And today I looked at my receipt, and it was 5:17, but it said 17, 17, 17. And 17 is a very significant number in our family. So I pointed it out to my husband. Tonight I came in, we turned on Coast to Coast, and there, by God, the clock radio said 11:11.
I love it.
And then with your guest on, I thought, you know, I don't know if this is exactly synchronicity, but it just seems like there's a lot of number things that come up for me.
And that happens, Jeffrey, to a lot of people, this synchronicity of numbers. 11:11 has happened for me for a long, long time. What do you add to that?
Well, it's a very, very tricky area. You might want to, your caller might wish to, Laurel is her name.
That's her name.
Yeah. She might wish to consult a numerologist to see if there's anything deeper in those numbers. I know for myself, a number that comes up a lot is 137. Well, it turns out that 137 in physics is a very important number. It represents the ratio between the weak and the strong forces of physics. So it has something to do with the deep structure of the universe itself. But it's also possible that once you have it in your mind that these numbers are going to come up, your subconscious starts to notice. Like, I just bought a new Chevy Volt, and now all of a sudden, I notice Chevy Volt.
Everywhere. That happens to me, too.
So part of it may just be, you know, the operation of the mind itself.
Laura, go to this website, www.numberslady.com. That's Glynis McCants, the numerologist, as Jeffrey suggested here. And let's see what happens. But people see these strange numbers all the time. Who knows what will happen? Daniel in Palm Springs, California. It's your turn. Hey, Daniel, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm an ex-Scientologist, and part of the core belief of Scientology is that they believe in reincarnation and that we've lived past lives, many lives. And I've actually had a story told me. This was before I was even open-minded to a lot of aspects of things that I've learned. But he was a staff member at the Church of Scientology over in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And he told me of a past life he revisited in an auditing session that turns out he was on some spacecraft and he was human, you know, looking. He was in some sort of futuristic spacesuit, he said, and there's some sort of problem because he was having an affair with a lady officer that was on the spaceship, and that was, like, forbidden. That's all he knew. So lately I've been thinking a lot, especially about the Xenu story with OT3. And it sounds ridiculous to a lot of people, but I'm almost wondering did L. Ron Hubbard touch in on something? Did something alien happen back then? And the story that they're saying just sounds so crazy. But I was watching on Ancient Aliens, how they have figurines that look like Boeing 747s. That was described in OT3. It's almost like, you know, something did happen and we're a part of it. And Scientology touched in on it, but people are more focused on the negative aspects of everything right now. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
All right. Jeffrey, you want to comment on that?
Well, I'm not familiar specifically with OT3, and I think many of our listeners are not Scientologists.
No.
Won't know all of the references, Daniel, that you made. But let's look at the history of all religions, whether it's Mormonism or Scientology or Judaism or the Hindu religion. You'll find events like this that occur that you could describe them as powerful archetypal forces. I think that's the way I like to think about it. But within the religion itself, it's often described as relating to extraterrestrials or alien intelligences or other dimensional beings, the way Ted Owens referred to it. So it seems to me that these powerful forces, archetypes, or energies within the collective consciousness of humanity relate to these stories and are capable of causing such powerful experiences, especially in the founders of religions, that they become very charismatic figures, and huge segments of society are organized around this, whether it's, as I say, Scientology or Mormonism.
Jerry, how do you explain this, Jeffrey, that, you know, you put your keys on a table, you come back, they're gone. They're gone. And then you go all over the house looking for them. You're the only person in the house. And there they are. You find them exactly where you put them. How does that happen? And it's happened to all of us.
It it's happened to all of us, and I suppose there are two potential explanations. The conventional explanation is that it's just a trick of the mind, and the parapsychological explanation is would be that they dematerialized and then rematerialized. Of course, that sounds too fantastic to be true, but there are cases of materialization and dematerialization that have been documented in the annals of parapsychological literature.
What if we have mischief maker ghosts and they're screwing around? They moved them around or something.
That would be another way of looking at it, or from the archetypal perspective, every tradition has what they call the trickster archetype. It's particularly
That's
popular
right.
amongst Native Americans, and you could say there is a force within the human psyche itself, the collective mind of humanity, that just loves to play tricks.
Let's go to Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. Bill, go ahead.
Yes, welcome, my station. It's just a comment and a question. The big news is that Facebook now has 1 billion subscribers, and I'd like to ask the doctor if how does that relate to our need or our ability to communicate outside the realm of parapsychology and instead using a technology to do so?
Social networking, Jeffrey, how does that affect things?
Well, you know, it's very early in the social networking evolution, and it's as if we are creating a new body. You might say it's part of biological evolution itself, that we are a species that is now creating the technological means for a billion people and eventually more to communicate with each other, something like what Peter Russell in his book referred to as the global brain. It's hard to know exactly how this is going to evolve, but I would suggest that it serves as a means of amplifying everything else that's going on within our consciousness and helping to make the unconscious more conscious. It's not just Facebook, of course, it's cable TV, it's the internet as a whole, and to me it's a very interesting project. You could say it's part of what Barbara Marx Hubbard thinks of as the birth of a whole new species.
All right, Jeff is truck driving now in Iowa, and it's your turn. Jeff, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
I wanted to bring up something that you mentioned earlier about the military application for intuition as a threat detection. And I looked it up, and it's a DARPA project I'm referring to that they call the Luke Skywalker glasses. And it is where they rapidly flash video monitoring screens in front of you rather than one person monitoring a few different screens that are video recording the border or something. They rapidly flash these video monitor screen images in front of your eyes and then monitor your brain waves. And it is through your subconscious that you detect the patterns. And then I guess they would go back to one where you had a spike in your brain waves. And this kind of also synchronizes with the lady who called in and said she detects patterns in the numbers. And you see the Chevy Volt everywhere now because it's a pattern that's been in your subconscious. Well, I guess humans, as the pattern-seeking primates we are, have developed this ability through needing to detect the pattern in nature, say it's a grizzly bear or whatever, because the consequence of detecting a false pattern is you might just jump and run because you thought you saw something that wasn't there. But the consequences of not detecting a pattern is that you might get eaten by the bear or the lion. And so I guess on the border, they have these video cameras monitoring, and the success rate is up to 90% or something like that, because prior to this, they would detect coyotes and things like that using the video monitoring and motion detectors. But now they use the subconscious to detect the pattern of a human or a vehicle.
All right. Interesting observations, Jeffrey.
It sounds interesting. I'd like to read the actual research study to learn more about it. I'm inclined to think that this research is still in the very early stages, but your caller, Jeff, makes it sound like it's much more advanced than I had realized.
beyond your class, so what else is going on at the University of Philosophical Research?
Well, it's the University of Philosophical Research is dedicated to studying the wisdom traditions of every culture. So there are classes, for example, looking at the mysticism within the Islamic tradition or ancient Chinese traditions or the traditions of Sanskrit and yoga or Buddhism and how that relates to things like biological self-control, which is a topic that your caller just alluded to. How does it relate to disciplines of meditation and yoga? How does it relate to the American Indian tradition? We believe that every culture has a tradition of deep inner wisdom, and the goal of this university ultimately is to preserve that knowledge and to combine it with modern scientific research to help train individuals to be leaders in building a new society based on a balance between the inner and the outer realities.
John in Mesa, Arizona, it's your turn. John, you're on with Jeffrey. Hello, John? John is no longer with us. Yes, he is. He's on this line. Hey, John.
I'm here.
Good.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Good. All right. Thank you guys for taking the call. Really interesting subject. And I've been trying to get in. I do get nervous, by the way, so I hope you allow me to break the ice a little bit. I've been in martial arts for 30 years or more, and a lot of meditation. I've been a bouncer, a lot of crowd control, a lot of crazy things.
Oh, sure. I bet.
And one thing I would do to try to strengthen my will in situations like that is meditate a lot. And I ran into a situation where I would get the chills, you know, the energy that comes up through the top of your head as mm-hmm. you think of something brilliant or, you know, just anything in general. And I was able to control that for an extended period of time. And in doing so, I was able to, you know, think of calling UFOs, as Jeff was talking about earlier. And at one point, I was on the balcony with a friend of mine, and I'd been successful on two other occasions by myself, but I wanted to see if it would work with
a witness.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it did. It was remarkable. I had put myself in the state of mind only, and I got really good at it where I could do it within 10 seconds or 15 seconds. And he was standing out in the balcony with me, and I gave myself the chills, took into my meditation, you know, my standard practice, and then called for it. And suddenly a white orb just kind of swoops in kind of sideways and then right in front of both of us and just totally remarkable. I'm all, see, there it is. And right when I said that, it just took off. And then since I was up on the balcony, there's a little step to the roof. And I jumped up on the roof and tried to see where it went. And ultimately, it kind of went down in towards the ground, if you will.
It just disappeared that way.
Right. So my question to Jeff, if I may, and I forgive me for taking so long, is that have you heard of a study where, you know, that energy that you have through the chills has been documented or, you know, has gone any further, or have you heard anything like that?
Well, what you're saying reminds me of a phenomenon that's well known in the Sanskrit tradition, and now more and more modern scientists are paying attention to it. It's called Kundalini.
Yes.
And it refers to an energy that goes up and down the human spine and is related to paranormal abilities. But it's mostly being studied from the perspective of yoga practice rather than, and you could say martial arts as well, rather than modern science, where just a few scientists are beginning to look closely at it.
And, you know, he probably has learned how to do it.
It sounds that way. It would be wonderful if you're able to connect with some scientific researchers and begin to conduct some experiments yourself with this ability.
Jeffrey, we're going to come back with more phone calls in a moment here for you. But what are you working on now these days?
Well, my big interest is financial forecasting, actually.
Through the mind of a parapsychologist?
Well, yes, through psychic means and also through artificial intelligence.
What are you seeing these days? What's ahead?
Well, things are getting more and more chaotic.
Very intense, huh?
Yeah, things are getting very intense. We've been through, obviously, one of the worst financial crises in the last 80 years, and it's reverberating. It took from 1930 until roughly 1960 to work through the last one, and we may experience a historical period over the next couple of decades that will be similar.
Next up, we go to Peggy in Prescott, Arizona. Hey, Peg, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I wanted to ask Jeffrey if when he went to Berkeley, I was wondering if he knew a Dr. Stan Gertsen at Sonoma State. It was the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, the name sounds vaguely familiar, but I cannot say that I knew this person.
Well, I went to Sonoma State. We knew him as Stashu at that time. I was a member of ISHP, International Studies Humanistic Psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm also an eyewitness to, before I get into that, when was this occurrence over Sonoma State? Because I still have people in the area there that I know.
It occurred, as I recall, in December of 1976.
Way back.
December.
Way back. That is a long time.
Well, in March 13th, 97, I was an eyewitness to the Phoenix Lights.
Okay.
And I've talked to a number of people about it, but this is the first time I've said this to anybody, but I said to myself right before the Phoenix Lights appeared,
you summoned the Phoenix Lights?
Possibly.
Oh,
I don't know. But I was thinking about it just prior to the
event. You never know.
I swear to God. And
it's sometimes hard to tell the difference between a precognition and a psychokinetic event that you cause.
And sometimes there could be one and the same, Jeffrey,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of different cases. I mean, that's got to be pretty remarkable, though. You think about it, and there it is.
Well, it's quite intriguing. I did this research on Ted Owens, and it was so bizarre and unusual. But here we have, just amongst the last two callers, people who are experiencing this sort of thing in their own lives. It's becoming more and more common.
Jeffrey, we're going to come back with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll take final phone calls, the final hour. That's next.